not to be cocky, but I think I'm the best defensive player in the league right now.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_B-ball. We had a massive Thanksgiving Eve day of NBA action to break down. There were 14 games. We've had some big injury news since the last podcast. I'm going to talk about all of that in today's show. So
let's get to it.
A quick programming note. I won't be doing any DFS preview action on today's show, but tomorrow for Thanksgiving, actually, you'll probably listen to this today on Thanksgiving, which is Thursday. There will be the DFS preview show for Friday's action. So when you're dealing with your relatives and you don't want to hear them talk whatever bullshit they're talking, you can throw on the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast because we will still be having one more show this week. So it's Thursday's show, and then we'll still have Friday's show as well to get you ready for the 10-game slate on Friday. So that show will come out tomorrow. If you listen to this, for everyone who is in the United States, happy Thanksgiving to you guys. Again, I've said it before, we don't have Thanksgiving here in Australia, so no need to throw me a happy Thanksgiving or anything like that. Nothing is going down here. Just a regular old Friday here tomorrow for us, but you guys are celebrating Thanksgiving. Hope you guys all enjoy it and don't get into too many punch-ons with your family. Lots of NBA action, of course. I'm going to talk about the injury news that has come out. I recorded yesterday's show, then basically 10 minutes after I finished recording, the news about Paul Millsap's injury came out. So we'll talk about that when we get to the Denver Nuggets as well. Let's start off by talking about the monstrous line of the night for Wednesday. There were the 14 games on, so every team except for the Detroit Pistons and the Indiana Pacers were in action. So it's always huge to get a monstrous line of the night on a night like that. And it goes to Chris Middleton of the Milwaukee Bucks. Middleton had 40 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, hit 3 triples, had 4 steals, went 14 of 26 from the field and 9 of 11 from the free throw line. It was a very weird situation for the Bucks. We already know that the Muppet John Henson was out. Yanni Adetokounmpo was out with knee soreness. And then Jason Kidd did the old Jason Kidd special and took Tony Snell out of the lineup so he could start the mitten. Gary Payton II. What a just batshit crazy lineup. And it's just Jason Kidd to an absolute T. But Middleton shows just how much of a stud he can be. Over the last week, he's the 10th ranked player in fantasy leagues. He's ranked 41st for the season. He's averaging almost 20 points, 1.5 threes, 5.5 boards, and 4.5 assists with 1.4 steals. But one of the biggest impacts that Eric Bledsoe's arrival has had on Middleton has been his assist numbers, which have dropped down in those last 3 games at least to 2.7 per game. But he is shooting at a much elevated rate. He is at 55% from the field and only 33% from 3. So he could have actually been better in that time. Yeah, there was the slight worry that Bledsoe coming across would really impact him. But in the past 4 games, he's gone 27, 23, 15, and 40 for his points. The assist is what has been the worry, 2, 3, and 3 in those past 3 games. The game before that, though, he did have 8 assists. So it's not like it's a complete annihilation of his value. And he's going to be a steady top 50, top 40 type of guy for the rest of the season. Well, that's what I believe anyway. Now let's get on and talk about the waiver wire line of the night, and it is a man who I think has got this award a couple of times, or at least one more time this season, and that's Wes Johnson of the LA Clippers. 24 points for Jono, 6 triples, he had a rebound, he had an assist, and of course it's Wes Johnson, so we know that he had a steal, and we know that he had a block. He was 8 of 10 from the field, and he was 2 of 2 from the free throw line. While the Rooster Danilo Gallinari is out, Wes Johnson is getting big minutes, and he should be owned. In every league, he should be owned. Now, it depends on who you would drop to add Wes Johnson. His numbers have been great, and this is absolutely no lie. Over the last week, he is the 9th-ranked player in fantasy, averaging 15, 4, and 2 with 3.3 triples, 1.8 steals, and 2 blocks, shooting 56%. These numbers are illogical for Wes Johnson. He is a horrendous shooter. He's passed for 3 seasons, 36, 40, and 41. So going at 56% is due to decline. But the steals and the blocks, they're real. He blocks shots, he gets steals at a high rate. Now the question that everyone's asking me about Wes Johnson is, with Pat Beverly out for the season, does Wes Johnson get a bump? And the answer to that is probably not. And I'll tell you why, is because he plays at the three or he plays at the four. So once the Rooster comes back, there just aren't going to be very many, many minutes there. Now, he should see at least a comfortable 20 to 22 or 23 minutes per game as the backup behind the Rooster, playing a little bit of the four as well. Yes, he could move Sammy Decker out of the rotation entirely, and it could eliminate any minutes that Austin Rivers plays at the three, which again is a possibility. But if the Rooster's playing 33 minutes a night, we're left with, say, 15 minutes there at the three. If Blake Griffin's playing 36 minutes a night, that leaves you 12 minutes at the four. And that's assuming that we have no Willie Reed at the four, no Montrezl Harrell, no Sam Decker at all. And then that gives him, what, 25 minutes, Wes Johnson? And that's going to be hard for him to maintain must-own status. But again, the triple one ability of Wes Johnson does make him a beautiful stream option, and he can fit really well, especially on your punt points sort of teams as well, and I guess punt field goal percentage, because again, this shooting percentage that Wes Johnson is currently putting up is really unlikely to stick at that sort of a level anyway. But those defensive numbers, they can be considered relatively real, given we've seen him do this multiple times, you know, back, especially when he was with the Lakers, and he'd put up those numbers relatively consistently. But the other numbers, the shooting numbers, I'm just not ready to buy that he is he's a 49% shooter this season. I'm not ready to buy that he is shooting the ball that well, given his recent history where he was, yeah, unreliable, to be kind to him. The young gun of the night goes to Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers, 28 and 12 for Embiid. He hit a three. He had two blocks and an assist, 11 of 19 from the field and 5 of 5 from the free throw line. He played 30 minutes and left the game with 4 minutes to go because they were smashing the Portland Trailblazers. So he was in line for a huge, huge night in terms of playing time. He should be able to be a top 10 player from here on out. He's the 13th ranked player at the moment, averaging 22.5 and 11 with 0.8 threes, 0.8 steals and 1.9 blocks, like a legit triple one threat. He's got his free throws up to 76%. That could even go higher, but still only shooting 25% on threes, which after shooting 37% last season does have some room to improve. We know how good he is. You don't need me to tell you too much more about him. Injury is really the only risk. Production is going to come. There's zero doubt about that, that when he's on the court, the numbers are going to come and he will be a top 10 player from here on out is my projection. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Lauri Markkanen of the Chicago Bulls. Not the greatest night for Lowry. Just the 3 points, 7 boards, no other numbers, 1 of 9 from the field and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. Now, he's been really good this season, obviously. The 79th ranked player so far, averaging 14.5 and 8 with 2.5 threes. But one of the things that's always held him back in my mind from being able to project as being an elite fantasy prospect is the defensive numbers. 0.6 steals, 0.6 blocks, shooting just 42% from the field and 79% from the line. Now, if he could go out and go 14 and 8 and average 2 blocks, like a Porzingis sort of a guy,
percentages,
then that would really be able to elevate him to top 30, top 20 potential upside. But with Markkanen's inability, which we saw from him in college, inability to get those defensive numbers and be like a points, rebounds, threes, which is still valuable, it does limit his overall upside. I'm not concerned about Nikola Mirotic coming back. I'm absolutely not concerned about Punch Blob Shiploke taking minutes away from him. He's going to be locked in at this 30, 31, 32 minute mark all year. Yeah, he might see his efficiency rise. I believe he will see his efficiency rise this season as it goes on, but putting up some impressive numbers, it just wasn't so much the case in a game where the Bulls were really smacked around by the Utah Jazz, and they're going to get smacked around in many, many more games this season. I don't think there's much doubt about that, unfortunately, for Bulls fans. As I said earlier, we have got 14 games to talk about, so it's a stack to get through, and then we are going to wrap up the perfect DFS lineup of the night at the end of that. And of course, the DFS projections for Friday will be handled on Thursday or Friday show, whatever day it is you're listening. So make sure you're checking. Oh, yeah, no, it'll always be Friday show. So make sure you are checking that out when it does come out. Let's get into these games now and talk about those in a little bit of extra detail. First one of those is the Portland Trailblazers. I mentioned they got smacked already. They got smacked by the Philadelphia 76ers. Dame Lillard was decent, 30 points with 6 triples. Not a lot in the other areas, just the 2 assists and a horrendous field goal percentage issue, 11 of 27. And it's not so much that you know, he was at 41%. It's the fact that he was at 27 attempts is a real, real dip in what he can do. CJ McCollum, really, really close to getting the dud of the night. CJ, 5-5 only on 1 of 14 shooting. That is horrific. At least he hit all, literally, he hit 3 of his free throws, and that's the reason that he was not the dud of the night over Lowry. Just a horrific night from CJ. Now, he's been shooting, I think, 51% from 3 before this game. That is clearly going to drop. He only took 3 3-pointers in this one, missed them all. But his field goal percentage was at such a significantly high level that regression was bound to kick in. Doesn't mean he's going to shoot at 7% in every game like he did in this one, but some regression was going to come. And the guy we do have to talk about, though, for Portland is Shabazz Napier, who played 27 minutes again, 13-3-4, 2 steals. He's shooting at 63%, I believe, from 3 on the season, and that's clearly not going to be able to stick. But his role in the rotation appears legitimate. We've seen Mo Harkless be an absolute disaster for pretty much all of this season, and Napier is getting a lot of those minutes, and he's providing a lot for this team. Now, I don't think that he is a 12-team league player just at this point, but it's a possibility. Like, he could be a guy that if you added in a 12-team league, it wouldn't be horrific. He's the 137th ranked player over the last 4 games, playing 24 minutes a night, averaging 11 points, shooting 50 and 75. But yeah, when you're shooting 50% from the field in that time and you're still not cracking the top 100, it does give me some pause before suggesting that he's a 12-team ad. He's more of a 14-team league guy, but I reckon his minutes are looking pretty decent at this point, and you're constantly looking at them, and they might be something that does need to be bumped up in the basketball monster projections, just because they are really favoring that. Now, whether they just completely begin eliminating Mo Harkless from the rotation and really sort of dropping him down, it's a possibility given how poorly he has played and how little he has given the team in terms of offense. Napier is someone, at this point, he's someone just to keep just a smidgen of an eye on. That's sort of where we sit with Shabazz at the moment. But it has been impressive after he had a relatively difficult start to his NBA career, on the Heat, on the Magic, but now settling in on the Blazers with that opportunity that has opened up this season with the departure of the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb. Yusuf Nurkic owners, they wouldn't be happy with this. Mainly the percentages, 14 and 11 with 2 blocks is absolutely fine. But it's the fact that he was 6 of 13 from the field and a horrendous 2 of 7 from the line. Never really been a great free throw shooter, never really been a high field goal percentage guy. So you did have to bear those things in mind when drafting him, but this is obviously on the lower end of what's acceptable. Noah Vonleh started, but didn't start the second half. Evan Turner started the second half, mainly because the Terry Stotts and the Blazers wanted to match Evan Turner up with Benny Simmons, and Turner played 34 minutes. He'd been playing low 20s for most of the games prior to this, and I wouldn't think that this is a permanent shift in the starting lineup to get Evan Turner in there, so I wouldn't be getting too excited about that. He had 4-4-3 in 34 minutes. On to the Sixers, Ben Simmons, 16-8-9. Wasn't his best night, but 16-8-9 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. I'm fine with that. I can get behind that. I'm sure you can as well. And he didn't shoot well. And this is what I talk about all the time that separates elite fantasy options from so-called or borderline ones, is that when he has a shit night shooting, he can actually just resurrect the value in the other categories. So he was 8 of 20 from the field and missed both his free throws, which is horrendous, a true shooting of 38%, but adding 8 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals and 2 blocks really does keep you going and keeps his value elite. And then if he has a night where he shoots 55%, you're talking about 25-8-9 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. And that's brilliant. And Lonzo Ball falls a little bit into that same category. Šarić remains starting, 11-7 with 3 triples, a steal and a block. Nice from him, but the 30 minutes is now down to 26 minutes with the return of Jared Bayless and the return of Markel Fultz. I think will impact that just a little bit more as well. He's fine in a 12-teamer, but yeah, he's probably going to be your worst guy, your second worst guy. TJ McConnell got some extra minutes back, 27 here, 13-3-7. But really hot shooting that's unsustainable, and I don't believe he is going to be able to maintain that top 100-ish type of value which you'd want for a 12-teamer. Bayless was shit-ass, 0 points in 22 minutes, while Timothy Luwawu-Cabarro also struggled, and Bob Cove, much like Simmons, not his best night. He was 3 of 11 from the field, but added 2 triples, 10 boards, 3 assists, and 2 steals, helping out in those other categories. Rashawn Holmes, DMPCD for the second consecutive game, while Amir Johnson got all of those backup minutes and added 2 steals and 2 blocks. Holmes, it's just not happening. I know you all know this, but don't own him in a 12-team league. It is not happening for Rashawn Holmes. Brooklyn and Cleveland. Jumpin' Joe Harris of the Brooklyn Nets. 29 minutes for Joe, 18, 5, and 4, 4 triples, 2 steals, 1 block. He has got a consistent role this season. We have seen it. And we've also seen a couple of games where he's been able to go off. Now, I don't think he's quite a 12-team league guy at this point. But with that consistent role with D'Angelo Russell and Jeremy Lin out, he's going to have some value as a 3-point streamer. For the season, he's the 160th ranked player, averaging 2 threes a game. And that can be valuable. That puts him into the Uncle P, Duke Ellington zone from last season, where he could get 2, 2.5 threes out of these guys in 20-odd minutes. And that has enough value. So in the deeper leagues, you do need to pay some attention to Jumpin' Joe. Spencer Dinwiddie, 8, 1, and 10. A steal and a block, so decent numbers from Dinwiddie, but he was never going to be able to continue the ludicrous level of production he put up at the start of his starting run. So just, you know, bear that in mind. While Rondae Hollis-Jefferson had 20 and 6, there was no Trevor Booker, so Tyler Zeller started at center. He played 21 minutes and had 7 and 7. That's pretty ho-hum. While Jarrett Allen played 19 and had 6, 4, and 2 with a block. Allen is the guy to watch here long-term. I think it's going to be probably another month or two, at least, until you can consider him a 12-team league guy, but he is the guy that you do want to pay attention to. While the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, had 15, 4, and 2 with 3 triples. A nice, solid line from him. Caris LeVert, the minutes are frustrating, only 23, but 9, 7, 5 with a steal is really good. Not a 12-team league guy at the moment, but the production is coming back and he is showing the sort of stuff that did get me excited about him as a prospect. For the Cavs,
LeBron James.
33, 6, and 5 for LeBron. I think he scored about 20 points straight in the last quarter. 2 steals and 4 triples. Just really, really crushing it there. Well, Jay Crowder, a decent night. But you can look at it, and a lot of people do this. They look at the box score and they go, man, 14 points, 26 minutes. Jay Crowder, he's back. And then you go, okay, well, he took 5 shots and he hit 4 of them. So what's the realistic expectation for him to be an 80% shooter? It's probably not that high. He had 1 rebound. The 2 steals are nice, but that sort of shooting efficiency and that sort of production on such low usage is just not realistic. So to me, he's more of a 14-team league guy. Dwayne Wade, 28 minutes, 18, 4, and 5. While Iman Shumpert remains out, and Derek Rose, of course, Wade is going to have some value, but after that, he's not going to have long-term 12-team league value, I don't think. Well, Kevin Love had 18 and 10. In his, how many minutes? 31 minutes for Kevin Love. Another star for Jose Calderon. Played 20 minutes, had 5, 1, and 2. Was unable to repeat the heroics from the other day. So I don't think many people expected that to be the case, but just wanted to point that out. While the plumber, J.R. Smith, had 3, 2, and 1. Definitely not a 12-team league guy, which I'm sure, again, you are all aware of. Washington and Charlotte, the Hornets get the victory in overtime here. We'll start with the Wizards. Johnny Wall, 31, 1, and 11. Really good efficiency from Wall. That's a massive, massive night from him. While I think the biggest story is looking at the fact that Markieff Morris played 34 minutes. He had 14 and 8 with a 3 in that playing time, going 6 of 10 from the field. And that's the biggest indication that he's ready to play his usual load of minutes. What that's going to mean is that Kelly Oubre is going to be stifled. 23 minutes for Oubre, 9 and 4, and his 12-team league value is kaput. Otto Porter, not his best night, 12 and 4 in 28 minutes, while Bradles Beal had 22 and 4 with 2 assists and 2 steals. Got to highlight Marcin Gortat, who played 37 minutes, 8 and 11 with 2 blocks. I thought that with Markieff getting more minutes, you'd see a little bit less from Gortat, but that hasn't been the case, playing over 30 in 3 consecutive games. Before that, he'd been like at 26 a night and looked like his value was really falling off. He's still a guy to hold, but it's a situation to monitor as the season progresses. On to the Hornets, and this is the first of the injury news that we have to really talk about. Is it Nick Batum? Had that elbow strain earlier in the season, and there was talk of him getting perhaps season-ending surgery. Ended up not going for the surgery, came back a week or so ago, and then had to leave this game at halftime due to a left elbow contusion. That is the same elbow that he had the strain in, and the talk coming out of the Hornets is not positive. I think that there's a significant issue here that's not just a contusion. The fact that, you know, the Hornets are worried, we'll find out tomorrow just how serious it is. If it was just a bruise, you go, you know what? It's a bruise. He got a knock on the funny bone. He'll be all right. But the fact that, like, oh no, we need to get back to Charlotte. We need to figure, oh no, so we'll find out tomorrow or the next day just how serious this injury is, leads me to believe that it's serious. And it's some sort of issue that is the same thing that he suffered in the preseason that caused him to miss the start of the season. So in that case, Jeremy Lamb played 37 minutes and had 24, 7, and 5 with 3 triples and 3 blocks. And he should be gone and added everywhere. Now, don't drop Batum, but go and add Jez Lamb, because this, I think this is a potential, you know, maybe a 4 to 8 week injury for Batum. That's sort of what I'm feeling at the moment. It may even be more. So, and this is just gut feel, reading the quotes, reading the tenor of the words used by Hornets beat reporters and the team themselves. It is definitely a concern for Batum here, and I am concerned. Dwight Howard's renaissance continues, 26-13 with a block. He has been fantastic this season. Well, Marvin Williams had his first good game probably all year, 12-4-4 in 30 minutes. You can do better than Marv in 12-team leagues. Kemba Walker had 24-5-5. The shooting wasn't awesome, but that's still not a bad line. While Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, if you own him, you cannot ask for anything more than 12-7-2 with a steal and a block. He's a 12-team league guy. Don't get overly excited by looking at his rank in 9-cat, because I think he's had like 3 turnovers for the season or something stupid like that, and that really does inflate his value. But he's fine in a 12-team league, definitely a 14-team league sort of a player. Interestingly, with Batum not playing at all in the second half, Malik Monk didn't see the court. We got those extra minutes for Jez Lamb and in overtime as well, and the Baconator, Dwayne Bacon. So Monk, deeper leagues, maybe, but they might even add Trevion Graham back in there if Batum has to miss some time. So that is something that we do have to pay attention to. The Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat. The Celtics have their 16-game win streak snapped. Jason Tatum was great once more, 18-7-4, a steal, a block, 3 triples. His minutes aren't going anywhere. His production may tail off. His production will tail off. I can guarantee you that, because he's not going to continue to shoot at 50% from 3. But everything else, he's just very effortless out there, and it's a really good line. Jaylen Brown was strong as well, 14-3 with a pair of steals and a pair of threes. Kyrie, 23-1-3, adding the 3 steals. Been a massive, massive help in those steals category this season, so another big game from him. While Marcus Morris moved to the bench in a matchup situation, he also may not play one of the games across the weekend. The Celtics have a Friday, Saturday back-to-back, so he might not see action there. But in a 12-team league, I'm sure you can do better than Marcus Morris. Marcus Smart played 34 minutes. 7-3-4, so the assists are nice, but not the overall best game from Smart. I still do think he's a 12-team league, but it's not necessarily for your team. It just depends on how he fits in. While Aaron Baines made the start and had 2-2, nothing to really see with him. We were all set for our big Kelly Olynyk revenge game, and he had 6 points and 6 rebounds in 20 minutes. And I had, let's start doing this now, because I had numerous people tweeting at me, Slack channeling, messaging me, man, revenge game, Joshua, revenge game. Look at Eric Bledsoe and Greg Monroe, revenge game is real. And then, so I was like, cool. Well, Kelly Olynyk had a revenge game and did jack shit. All right. Kevin Durant went back to OKC and he was below his season numbers. So they're the 4 guys who played against their teams from recent history. So if it's a 50-50 call of someone's going to have a big night against their former team, it's a coin toss. Meaning there is no perceptible trend in that. And I am literally going to really dig into this and study all this stuff over the offseason to try and get a definitive answer. But my main point, now I'm not saying that there is no factor in revenge games. Bledsoe hates the Suns. I said this on yesterday's podcast. If you ever want to look at revenge game, Bledsoe is the one to go for against the Suns. He hates them, really hates them. I'm not sure that Monroe was too pleased with the Bucks either, with the way they treated him. But Bledsoe hated the Suns. Right, so there's a little bit of something there, but there's also the case where teams hate the organization or the situation, and they go in there and they get choked up and overworked and force things too much and really shit the bed. So it can go both ways. But my point in this always is that people love to highlight it. Revenge game, look at this. But then no one will mention that Kelly Olynyk was in a revenge game and did nothing. So the only ones that get highlighted are the ones that put up big numbers, very similar to contract years. Look at this guy, Deion Waiters' contract year, went bananas, fantastic. How's Rajon Rondo's contract years gone recently? Terrible. These are people don't highlight the opposite factor. They use positive reinforcements on preconceived notions. And I just want to point out the things that aren't the case, that don't happen, to give you the full picture of all that stuff. Because it's not just revenge game, big numbers. Because half the time, it doesn't happen. And if you're basing your DFS lineups on that, why don't you flip a coin? Is Thinga going to have a big game? Yes, no. It's the same sort of response. And I know I'm simplifying it a bit, but I wanted to get my thoughts on that out there to really clarify it. The rest of the Heat guys, the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic was great, 27-5-4 in his 31 minutes, while Tyler Johnson had a nice, really efficient night, 16-7 in his 27 minutes. He's fine to own in 12s, but I wouldn't be rushing to get him. He's more of a 14-team league guy, while Deion Waiters really got going, 26-2-6 with 4 triples. Joshy Richardson, it was a real struggle for Josh. 0 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist and 1 block on 0 of 5 shooting. If you do want to drop him, you're not going to hear me complain about it. He is struggling. The minutes are fine, but he just cannot get really anything going on a consistent basis. So if you want to drop him, by all means. Justice Winslow, 8-8 in his 25 minutes, while the Duke Wayne Ellington, another 22 minutes for Ellington. That's over 20 minutes for three consecutive games. I think he's hit about 39,000 threes in those three games. I joke, but I think it's like 15 threes in those three games. He hit two here, had 9 and 5, and again, an elite three-point streaming option that you can use, while Hassan Whiteside had 8 and 10 with two blocks in his playing time. Jim Johnson, a few questions here, worried about what Jimmy's going to do, when he's going to make us proud again. He's struggling, there's no doubt about that. 21 minutes here, 4, 2, and 4. He's still a hold to me, but he is definitely struggling. After a really good start to the year, things are starting to come unraveled a bit, with Justice Winslow starting ahead of him, with Kelly Olynyk eating into some of his playing time, and of course the return of Deion Waiters, who was out for a big chunk of that stretch down to the end of last season. Let's go on to the next game. It's the LA Clippers and the Atlanta Hawks, and we'll talk about the news that Patrick Beverley is dealing with a meniscus injury and microfracture surgery, and he will be out for the rest of the season. The big unknown, I guess, for the Clippers now is the status of Milos Teodosic, who played two games before having a plantar fascia injury. We don't know exactly when Teodosic is going to be up. If you're in a rotisserie league or a deeper league or a weekly changes league, add him, because when he comes back, I think he's going to assume a starting role and play 30 minutes a night, and they're going to run him, Lou Williams, and Austin Rivers, 32, 33 minutes apiece, limiting the rookies like Juwan Evans and Sindarius Thornwell. So go and add Milos. But if you're in a daily changes league, holding a guy like that, look, and it might even be worth doing it now, because he might come back in 2 weeks. He might come back in a week. But it's more of a, let's assess my situation before rushing and grabbing Teodosic. In a roto league, just sit his ass on your bench, and you're fine. If it's for a month, it's no worries. Now, previously, before Beverley went out, so Beverley had his knee injury, and I talked about this the other day. This is why you don't activate these guys off IR straight away. He'd been out, and Sindarius Thornwell had started in his place. Beverley came back for one game, and then Thornwell didn't start. He played, in fact, just 7 minutes, while Lou Williams started and played 37 and had 20 points with 8 assists. Now, it's clear he is a must-own player. 10-10 leagues, you have to own Lou. Austin Rivers also got the start. He played 37 and had 18, 2 and 5 with 2 steals, a block, and 3 triples. But he shot 58% and he is not a good shooter. I don't believe in Austin Rivers as a must-own 12-team league guy. He is absolutely fine to own, but he is not a must-own guy. He's more of a must-own 14-team leaguer. Blakey Griffin had a triple-double, 26, 10 and 10, while DeAndre had 14 and 16 in his 37 minutes with 2 blocks. And Juwan Evans played more than Sindarius in this one. 19 minutes for Evans, 4, 1 and 2. And him and Thornwell both get an increase in value for, say, 20-team leagues. On to the Hawks. The Baptist, John Collins, started. First NBA start, 38 minutes, 14, 10 and 3 with 4 steals on 7 of 9 shooting. He has a legitimate chance to be a top 50 player for the rest of the season. It's probably not going to be the case, but I think he's guaranteed top 100 numbers from here on out. Now, what happens with him in terms of his role is a little bit unclear. There was no Luki Babbitt, there was no Mike Muscala, but with the way that he's played the two previous games, big minutes, 36 minutes in both of those without having foul problems, is a positive sign for a team that's as shithouse as what this team is. You're developing your young guys, which isn't Muscala, which isn't Babbitt, I think is really key. And the fact that we're seeing confidence from Budenholzer in playing Collins alongside the Undertaker should give us a fair degree of confidence that John is going to play at least approaching 30 minutes on most of these nights, whether it's 27 or 28. And shit, if he gets for 35 minutes, lock him in for a top 50. If he gets 33 minutes a night, he is an absolute guarantee for top 50 numbers. I can assure you of that. Getting those minutes is the challenge. As for the Undertaker, well, the more minutes that the Baptist plays at power forward, the more minutes there are available for Dwayne Dedman. He played 29 minutes and had 17 and 6 with 3 triples and a block, so he's a clear must-own to me as well. Dennis Schroeder had 19, 3 and 7, while Kent Bazemore, a good night from Baze, 14 and 5 with 4 triples. I think he's a 12-team league guy, but he is going to be inconsistent, while Ballinelli had 20 points and added a pair of steals. And he's been really impressive this season. Fine for 12s, not absolutely a must-own guy. Torian Prince struggled, only 21 minutes. He will occasionally get in the doghouse with Budenholzer. 2 points, 1 rebound, 3 assists, and 2 steals. It's not a permanent thing. It's nothing to be concerned about at all. DeAndre Bembry also played 14 minutes and dished 2 assists. You're in a deep league and you need assists. Bembry's a guy to add. 20 teams, 18 teams, 16-team leagues. You might find it tough to get assists off the wire. Bembry's your guy, because at some point I think he's going to start getting 18 minutes a night. And, a 3 to 4 assist output from him is not a crazy And not a crazy expectation. The next game, the Toronto Raptors and the New York Knicks. Big game, big win for the Knicks, in fact. The Raptors here, Kyle Lowry, this is great. 25, 10 and 5. Four triples, two steals and a block, and got to the line eight times, which again was one of the things that was really holding him back this season, was his lack of free throw attempts. So got that sorted here. Big game for Lowry owners. Norm Powell returned to action, played off the bench behind the Jedi, OG Anunoby. 23 minutes for Powell, 11, 4, and 2 with three triples. Now, in the past, Norm has always done better with the starters versus him on the bench. This season, it's the opposite. When he plays with the bench, he takes over more, and he's in a better situation. But getting 23 minutes a night, I don't think he's going to be rushing out to get 25 or 26 minutes a night. It makes him hard to own in 12-team leagues. The injury news we got today on D'Lon Wright was that he is not going to have surgery on his shoulder and he's going to be out for a month only. So that does limit, again, the upside of guys like Freddie Van Vliet, as well as Norm Powell and the Jedi and CJ Miles if D'Lon's going to be back in a month's time. So Powell's more a 14-team leaguer. Jonas Valanciunas, yeah, good numbers. 8 and 6, three blocks, 18 minutes, fantastic, but it's 18 minutes. You're not banking on six blocks per 36 out of Valanciunas, but the other numbers are realistic. The problem is that's three consecutive games for JV under 20 minutes a night. And with the rise of Pascal Siakam, with the solid play of Bebe and Jakob Poeltl, this game excluded, it's hard to see him getting anywhere near 25 minutes a night, Valanciunas, that is. So if you're in a 10-team league, I reckon you need to move on from him. I just don't see it happening. It's been trending this way for a long time. Him and Serge Ibaka just do not work together at all, and it is a concern. Now, as for Ibaka, he was piss poor. 9 and 2. Now, the four blocks is nice, and him and Valanciunas combined for 7 blocks, which is huge. But everything else is real piss poor from Ibaka. Not a drop guy, though. The Jedi started 16 minutes. 3 points. Love him for deeper dynasty leagues, but he's not having a top 150 impact this season. While DeMar DeRozan had 18, 6, and 4, and weirdly was just 2 of 6 from the free throw line. On to the Knicks, Tim Hardaway Jr. Thankfully, you didn't drop him, right? None of you dropped him, thankfully. 38, 6, and 7, 4 triples, 1 steal, 1 block, 8 of 10 from the line, and 13 of 27 from the field. A brilliant, brilliant performance. As I stressed numerous times, there was absolutely zero chance he was going to go through the season averaging 1 rebound a game. There is zero chance of he was going to go through the season averaging 0 steals and 0 blocks. There was zero chance he was going to go through the season shooting 20% from the field. There was zero chance he was going to go through the year averaging 1 assist per game. All those numbers had to come up and absolutely strike me dead. They came up. It's an amazing coincidence that happened, but here it is. So that when you're looking at guys who put up shit performances to start the year, have a look. Does this shit look completely unrealistic? And if so, it's going to change. And that's exactly what we've seen from Tim. And he's been absolutely fantastic in this role so far. Porzingis had 22 and 12 with 3 blocks.
Porzingis.
Big night from him. While Courtney Lee continues to be real solid. 15, 5 and 7 with 3 steals. I don't hate him in a 12-team. Like I said the other day, he's probably more of a playoff-time 12-team league guy, but shit, the way he's playing at the moment, if you want to add him now, fine. He's giving you really consistent numbers. Enes Kanter, 11, 4, and 5 with 2 blocks in 32 minutes. That's two consecutive 30-plus minute games for Kanter. So, yeah, look, he's owned everywhere. Surely. Doug McDirt, 8 and 6 in 26 minutes. Yeah. While Frankie Ntilikina, limited minutes once more, 7-1 and 1 in 16 minutes, but let's not forget that Jarrett Jack was terrible in his 32. He went 2-4 and 2. And again, I still believe in some point in December, Ntilikina will start. He is ill at the moment, so that's limiting his minutes, but I do believe that he is going to start at some point. I didn't talk about, actually for Toronto, I didn't talk about Pascal Siakam, who had 8, 8 and 4, but more importantly, played 29 minutes. If you're in a 16-team league, I'd be adding Siakam. He looks good, he looks better than Poeltl, he looks better than Nogueira. Shit, he looks better than Ibaka at this point. Now, he's not going to play consistently more minutes than Serge, but he does look really good out there, and that's going to keep him in a pretty consistent role, which is enough for deeper leagues. The next game we take a look at is the Orlando Magic and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Magic are really starting to fall off, but at least they put together a much better performance in this one, as Gordon had 26 and 9 with 2 triples. Yeah, shot well from the field, not from 3. Well, Terry Ross, 34 minutes for him, 22 and 6 and 3 triples. Do not rely upon Terry Ross to do that. Nick Vucevic, 11 and 14 with 4 assists and a block is a decent night, while Fournier had 19 points with not much else. And Lord Alfred Payton, he was dropped in many leagues, and I said if he was dropped in my league, I would add him. 10, 4, and 13, 2 steals and a block. His free throw percentage has been horrendous this year. He went 2 of 7 from the line. I think he's at sub 30% almost for this season. I probably should check that out while I'm spouting off numbers before you get the wrong impression. But before this game, Vogel said he was considering a lineup change, but wanted to give the point guards a little bit more time to get settled after their injuries. I don't think there's any risk of him losing out this job. He's at 33% from the line this season, so not under 30%. My apologies, Lord Alfred. No John Isaac out there again with Mo Spates and Aaron Aflalo taking those minutes, but John Simmons, who is owned in 12-10 leagues, and I don't believe should be, 9-3-2 in his 18 minutes. On to the Timberwolves.
My name is Jeff.
Teague had 22-3-11 with two steals and a block. Weird shot distribution again for this team. Butler took 19, Wiggins took 15, while Teague, Taj Gibson, and Towns all took 11. Another sub-20 usage game for Towns. Yeah, Teague is putting up decent numbers. I would have thought he would have sacrificed some shots to let the better players play or let the better players score, but apparently that's not what's happening. Taj played 40 minutes, 24-9 with two steals and a block. Good night from Taj. Low upside 12-team league value for sure, while Jim Butler had 26-3-3. Townsy, the numbers are all right, 18-13 with two threes, but the low shot attempts is limiting his overall value in the field goal percentage category. It's limiting everything that he can do, and I think it's going to be a real struggle for him to be the number one player this season. And if you can trade him away for a first-round player, LeBron, Boog, Tone Davis, I would do it. Playoff, especially in head-to-head leagues with the playoff schedule, I would do it. Wigo had 20-6 with a 111 as well. The bench, the most minutes anyone on the bench played was 12. Jeng played 12 minutes, owned in 40% of leagues. They are clearly asleep, those owners, while Crawford played 12 minutes. That is just a horrendous use of a bench unit, but shout out to Tom Thibodeau. The San Antonio Spurs, man, no, there's no good news. It seems to come out about Kawhi Leonard ever. You know, Popovich is saying, I'm worried, this is weird, I don't know what's going on. It's just not responding to treatment as well as possible, and we're definitely not seeing him until December, and Tone Parker is going to be back before him. There is almost no doubt about that. Pau Gasol had 17-9 with three blocks and three triples. He's been surprisingly effective this season, but this was a blowout, 27-point loss by the Spurs to the Pelicans. So looking at that rotation, it's really hard to garner anything from that, just based on the fact that Pop just said, well, we're done, and just limit the minutes to a lot of his guys. Like Dan Green played just 18 minutes. Manu played 12. LaMarcus played 27. Rudy Gay got some junk time minutes. He had 19 points in 26 of them. I have zero faith in him being a 12-team league guy, though. On to the Pals. Boogie had 24-15 with two blocks. Good. Tone Davis had 29-11-4. Also good. Big nights from them. And Darius Miller continues to hit threes at a ludicrous rate. He is at over three triples a game over his past nine outings. Definitely in the Duke and Uncle P category. Stream in for threes. He had 12 points all from three. Three rebounds, two assists, and a steal. 28 minutes a night. He's getting those minutes on the wing in preference to guys like Ian Clark, Dante Cunningham as well. And he even played more than Etwan Moore in this one. Not a 12-team league guy, but this is a really strong run from Darius Miller, filling his role well. 13-1-2 for Drew is not awesome, while Rondo played 23 minutes and had 6-5-4. I still think Rondo should be owned, but he's bad. So he will become a droppable guy, I think, at some point. And I'm not ready to label him that just at this point. The Denver Nuggets and the Houston Rockets. Let's talk a little bit about Paul Millsap, who was reported yesterday having that wrist ligament injury. He's going to be out for 3 months getting surgery. The news came out today that, maybe just hold up a little bit. Maybe he's not going to get the surgery. In terms of what you do if you've got Millsap, maybe just wait if you haven't dropped him, just to see what they say. But I think it's almost guaranteed he's missing at least a month. And when Woj and Shams both report that he's out for 3 months, I feel pretty good that he is going to end up having that surgery. And they can be wrong. Anyone could be wrong. But I feel pretty good about that. Now, the question that everyone was asking me yesterday, who benefits? Do I add Fareed? Like, you absolutely don't add Fareed. Because A, he's bad. And it was pretty obvious to tell that Fareed was not going to be a guy to add. Because in that game that Millsap was out the last time and Fareed started, he played 19 minutes. Fewer minutes than Juancho Hernangómez and fewer minutes than Trey Lyles. So any indication that he was going to come in and play 30 minutes a night, there was no indication that that was going to be the case. Now, I didn't expect Fareed to play exactly 0 minutes, but he's shit. It's fair enough. He can't fit in the second unit next to Mason Plumlee, so if they're not going to start him, his minutes are going to be hard to come by. They put Fart and Will Barton in at the three. They put Wilson Chandler across to the four, and that basically signed the death knell for Kenneth Fareed's minutes. Lyles was fine, 24 minutes, 7-3-3 with a 111. Juancho had 9-3 with two triples in 18 minutes, and those guys could just very easily fill in the gap there with Barton getting some extra minutes, Chandler getting some extra minutes, and then Lyles and Juancho playing that extra playing time. So Fareed, if you're in a 16-team league, maybe, Same with Lyles and Hernan Gomez. There's no one who is a clear beneficiary. Now, Wilson Chandler and Barton need to be owned in 12-team leagues, and they are still around. And I would own Farden in 10 teams as well. But in terms of one of these other guys, they're just not going to sniff 12-team value, I don't think. Barton had 20 and 6, 2 triples, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. And you know what that means?
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Yes, it was absolutely a Richie Beno there for Will Barton. And he needs to be owned. He's owned in only 73% of the league, so add him. Nikola Jokic sprained his ankle, and we thought, oh, shit, here we go. But no, he came back into the game. This was a smashing. They got pumped by 30 points. But he came back and he played 26 minutes, 17, 6 and 3 with 2 steals and a block. Gaz Harris had 13, 1 and 0. 0 assists, but 4 steals.
Nice, Gary!
Yeah, it's not bad. Maybe it's not quite nice there, Wadey, but it's all right. And then we have the Blue Arrow, who was starting and then wasn't starting. And then was starting, but then played 24 minutes for the third consecutive game. 8-7-3. It wasn't like he was horrendous, but 8-7-3, while Manny Moutier played 25 minutes. And he was horrendous. 1-1-3 on 0-5 shooting. I do not understand Michael Malone's decision-making a lot of the time. There is zero reason to play Moutier more than Murray. Murray had played well. In those games that Gaz was out, Murray was playing 33 minutes a night and he's crushing it. And Gary Harris comes back and they just go, oh, let's just get Moutier in there more. Huh? What? And a game that Moutier was shithouse. So if you can work that out, then good luck to you, because I can't. Murray's still a guy that you own, and Moutier is not a 12-teamer. As for old Baby Neck, it wasn't good, and he's been shit for most of this season. 2-5 in 27 minutes for him. A guy that you want to own, but if he continues this bullshit, then get rid of him. Now, people think that he's going to go back to the numbers that he had last season, and I did have this mentioned to this on someone on Basketball Monster yesterday. They said, oh yeah, without Millsap, he'll just go back and do the same as last year. Well, no, because Jamal Murray is taking a much larger role this season. So a lot of those shots that Wilson was getting last season, they're going Murray's way. So it's not just a matter of, oh, it's the same rotation as last season, because Jameer Nelson was getting the bulk of the point guard minutes, and he doesn't shoot anywhere near as much as the Blue Arrow. So those shots that Baby Neck was getting, they're gone to Jamal Murray now. So it is harder to expect him to put up those sort of level of numbers. Remember when people were worried about Chris Paul? He had 23, 2, and 12 with 3 steals and 4 triples in his 28 minutes. Still not back to 4 minutes, but he is killing. His offense is ludicrous. And Chris Paul is going to be a really good pick. You could have got him legit. I saw him go at like 16 in leagues, and that is going to be a massive steal. He had 12 assists. Jim Harden had 9 assists. Yeah, they can work all right together. 21, 8, and 9 for Jim, while Ariza hit 7 triples in his 25 points with 2 steals and a block. Luke Marmute, plus 56. That is out of control. 26 minutes for him. And this was a game without Ryan Anderson and without Eric Gordon. So Marmute and PJ Tucker got extra minutes. Luke had 13, 4, and 1. 3 threes and 4 steals on perfect 5 of 5 shooting. A fantastic Marmute performance. Probably just a 16-team league guy, though, because when Anderson and Gordon come back, his minutes are going to be cut down. We also got the pleasure of seeing Joe Chi in the first half. He had 6 and 2, both of those, all of his points coming from 3, had a steal and a block. He is a fantasy guy, Chi, no doubt about that, but he's going to need 26 minutes a night to really come close to sniffing the top 150, and that's just an unrealistic expectation. This, as I said, was a blowout. Capella played just 17 minutes. We had Troy Williams play 8 minutes and Bob Brown play 8, and Briante Weber plays for the Rockets, if you weren't aware. Just bang the table there, so sorry about that that loud noise. The Golden State Warriors and the Oklahoma City Thunder, a bit of a blowout here. The Thunder get the big, big victory. Steph had 24, 5, and 6. KD, in a revenge game, had 21, 5, and 2. With 2 steals, and Draymond had 4, 4, and 6 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. And we saw Durant and Westbrook going at each other. And the more I see this, the more I am convinced it is 100% bullshit. There is no way that they hate each other. It feels like just mates who are just, going up against each other and really putting on a show. It just doesn't feel like there's any genuine dislike or animosity there. Russ puts that on. I just think Russ is just complete white line fever, and then off the court that he would be totally okay. But maybe I'm wrong with that. Omri Caspi really got some nice junk time minutes again, 11 and 6 in 14 minutes coming off the bench, but not a lot to talk about as Steve Kerr emptied the bench halfway into the fourth quarter. For the Thunder, Russell Westbrook owners, this is what you want. 34, 10 and 9, 4 steals, but more importantly, 48% on 27 shots, and 7 of 8 from the free throw line. Those free throw issues which are forcing him way down the rankings have changed. They're back. He's going to be a top 10 guy. I don't think there's any doubts about that. Paulie George, 20 and 11 with 4 steals, 4 triples and 2 blocks. Another monster from him. While Mello, strong numbers from Mello, 22 and 5. But apart from those three guys, there's not much else that happens on this team. Steve Adams had a 14 and 12 double-double. That's strong. Jeremy Grant has played under 20 minutes for three consecutive games with Adams back. Now, he was playing over 20 a night when Adams was healthy before that calf issue. So it is a little curious. So Grant's ability to be used as a streamer in, say, 14-team leagues is probably eliminated at this point, but we'll see how that goes. Pat Patterson played 6 minutes. We saw Josh Huestis play 18 minutes for 2 points. Just a whole bunch of bullshit on this bench for fantasy anyway. The Dallas Mavericks and the Memphis Grizzlies, the pencil with the game-winning banked three-pointer. He had 22 and 9 Harrison Barnes in 35 minutes, and in true Harrison Barnes fashion had 1 assist, 0 steals, and 0 blocks. That is what he does. It looks real sexy. He's a very sexy start-of-the-box score guy, and it fades pretty quickly. 22 and 9, man, that's really, really good. And then just nothing. And this is a constant with him. Dirk, big minutes, 2 consecutive games. 13 and 8, 2 steals, and a block with 3 triples. If Dirk gets 28 and 9, he's a 12-team league guy. I just don't feel confident that he's going to be able to do that. JJ Barea had 10, 1, and 11, so those are nice assist numbers for Barea, but not a 12-teamer. Well, Dennis Smith Jr. only played 27 minutes, but still had 17, 4, and 3. His field goal percentage is going to kill you. He took 20 shots. He hit 7 of them. That is a problem. But you should be aware of that. Owning a rookie point guard, that's going to be a concern. Yogi Ferrell, only 21 minutes for Yogi, not a 12-teamer. Well, Wes Matthews coming off some strong games, really shit the bed here. 2-1-4 in his 36 minutes. On to the Grizz. Of course, no Mike Conley, so we had Mario Chalmers starting again. 6-7-8 for Charmo with 2 steals. Only 2 of 11 shooting, but like I said earlier, bring the other stats, and if the shooting comes around, you're in for really big lines. Chalmers should be owned. Tyreek had 18, 9, and 7 with 2 steals and a block, and his resurrection has been something that's really pleasing. And the other thing that's really pleasing in this game is Deontay Davis. Very, very good fantasy prospects. Huge block rate, good rebounder, can score, really efficient guy. The problem is he just looks like he's dumb as dog shit half the time on the court, and that was a real problem with him last season and in Summer League, just lost, staring at the sky, not knowing where he needs to be. So it's all well and good to have a really nice fantasy skill set, Marquise Chris. But if you can't concentrate or do shit out on the court, you're not going to get the playing time. But he was really good in this game, Davis, replacing Brandon Wright. And if Wright's injury lingers, which it's Brandon Wright, so it probably will, then 15 minutes a night from Davis makes him a 16-team or 18-team league ad, especially if you're dealing with blocks or you need blocks. He is a name to watch because Wright's 30 years old already. We know how old the Gasol's 30, 31 already. So Davis is the guy that they want to be the center of the future. Not a bad guy to look at as a deeper dynasty acquisition target. Dylan Brooks started once more, 13 and 2 with 3 triples, while Gasol had 14, 10 and 4. And Chandler Parsons, in his revenge game, had 11 points in 24 minutes. But the shooting for Parsons continues to be strong this season, 56%, 5 of 9 shooting here and again. He is going to be a factor in January. I've said that plenty of times. I'll probably be wrong, but I have said it plenty of times. The Chicago Bulls and the Utah Jazz.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
Shout out to the people who said to me, oh man, the guys on The Ringer, they ripped off your Hello Darkness, My Old Friend to use for the Clippers. No one ripped anything off. This is a very, very well-known meme. It's just, this was something that my son said, hey man, you should put Hello Darkness, My Old Friend, because he sings it like anytime anything happens, he sings it. I should put it on the podcast. That common a meme that a 10-year-old kid sings it at school when something odd happens. When there's some sort of, in the kids' vernacular, when there's an epic fail, then he sings that song. So the guys at The Ringer didn't rip off. They didn't even listen to this podcast, I'm 100% sure. They didn't rip off Hello Darkness, My Old Friend. It's a well-known meme, but shout out to everyone who was trying to jump to defend me. And even if they did, I couldn't give a shit. Even if they did decide to use it, doesn't bother me in the slightest. SpongeBob Shiploke got 25 minutes in a blowout. He is the blowout king, flat track bully, 14 and 8 with a block. Decent numbers, but in the games that have been competitive, he just doesn't play enough, so not a 12-team league guy. While Chrissy Dunn made another start, 28 minutes for Dunny, 12 and 9, 2 steals. The percentages have actually been okay for Dunn this season. He is a must-own guy, while Jaren Grant had 8, 1 and 4, and you can leave him for the real deeper ones. Justin Holiday, just, again, shooting too much as per usual. Him and Bobby Portis just trying to work out who can have the highest usage while being the most inefficient. 12 and 2 for Holiday. He's a 12-team league guy at this point, but I do think that he is going to drop in value significantly. Well, Denzel Valentine, only 2 points, but I am happy the fact that he did get the 4 assists, and you know I like that part of his game. Markkanen, talked about him already, but Antonio Blakeney, coming off that big game against the Lakers, had 24 minutes again, 8-2 with 2 triples, but really we're talking about him in a 30-deep situation. Looking at him there. Actually, someone mentioned to me that day, Josh, you should do a recap of your team in the 30-deep league. It's the 30-deep league, which you see referenced on all other fantasy sites with all other fantasy industry people. And I don't really like talking about my teams and leagues that much, but if people have an overwhelming urge to hear me talk about it, I'll do it. But it's not something I go, man, you guys have got to listen to me talk about my team every week. It's not something I try to avoid doing that as much as I can. But if that's something that everyone really wants, and if you don't want it, let me know as well, then I'll do it. But that's sort of the zone we're talking about with Blakeney. Onto the Jazz, Derek Favors. Well, he's playing the Bulls, so fair enough. 23-7 in 29 minutes for him. Jonas Jerebko made another start, 10-6. Has got some, look, he's not losing that starting job, I don't think, while Gobert is out. 10-6 with 2 triples for Jerebko, and he can be an 18-team league sort of a player. Jingling Joe had 12-5, while Rocket Rodney Hood had 19-4 with 3 triples. But the questions continue to pour in about ravishing Rick Rubio. Only 24 minutes, but it's a blowout, so I'm not worried about the minutes. 10-3-2 with 2 steals and a block, so the defensive numbers are fine, bringing those. It's the assists that are the real concern. He's not a droppable guy. To me, it is a worry. Donovan Mitchell is there, and people go, oh, is Don Mitchell going to take his minutes? Well, he's already taken some playing time, but we're going to have a Rubio, Rocket, and Mitchell, you know, three-headed backcourt with about 30 minutes, 28 minutes for them on some nights, you know, most of the time. So there is a level of concern with Rubio, but if he gets the steals continually, and hopefully those assists pick back up, which I believe they will, I'm not fully confident, but I believe they will, then I think he's still a guy to hold. As for Mitchell, just horrendous with the shot. 1 of 10 from the field for Don in this one. 4, 5, and 7. So added the assist, had a steal and a block, but that field goal percentage, it's going to be a continual issue. So there's no escaping that whatsoever. The next game was the Milwaukee Bucks and the Phoenix Suns. Another overtime game. The Bucks, Chris Middleton, we talked about already. Now, Jason Kidd. I know you're dealing with no Adetokounmpo, you're dealing with no Teletovic, you're dealing with no Dellavedova, and the Muppet John Henson was out, let alone Jabari Parker. But under what circumstance is it ever a good idea to start the mitten Gary Payton II? Now, Payton sprained his ankle and lasted only 9 minutes with 5, 2, and 3. But the decision-making is weird. Now, I don't know if this is going to carry over, because Tone Snell played only 22 minutes. Now, you know I'm not the biggest Tone Snell fan, and I thought they should have moved him to the bench and started Bledsoe and Brogdon together. But that hasn't been the case, and Snell had been getting 36, 37 minutes a night and putting up his usual shitful performances. But the fact that with all those guys out, he played just 22 minutes is, if you're relying upon Tony Snell, then, yeah, my condolences. But it's a worrying sign. He had 4-1 with a triple one there. So, you know, the triple one's nice, of course, but Snell is just a 16-team league guy. But this is encouraging for Brogdon. He played 41 minutes and had 14-3-3 with 2 steals. Bledsoe played 45 and had 36-7 with 2 steals and 2 triples. Big night from Bledsoe. He also obliterated your free throws, going 6 of 13 from the line, which is horrendous. But playing Brogdon alongside Bledsoe and alongside the mitten was interesting. It's Kidd. They just snuck out a victory against the Suns in overtime. Injuries are an issue, but that sort of coaching decision just is bullshit. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's an easy move. Giannis is out. I'll put Brogdon in. And we'll run Brogdon. We'll run Bledsoe. We'll run Snell. We'll run Middleton. We'll play a little bit of DJ Wilson, perhaps. At the four, we'll play some Joel Bolomboy. We don't need to have a guy like Tony Snell playing 35 minutes a night, and you go, you know what, we've lost a perimeter guy, let's play our starting perimeter guy 50% fewer minutes. This doesn't make a lot of sense. Always a good night when you can get 41 minutes out of DeAndre Liggins as well. 2-6 with 5 steals and 2 blocks. So the defensive numbers were fine for Liggins. He looks like he's got a solid role, a 20-minute a night role, not a 40-minute a night role, and he can be a streams guy for defensive stats, but realistically, he's not very good. Thon McCurr, got to talk about him. 33 minutes for Thon, equaling his age. 16-8 with 3 blocks there for Thon. That shows his upside. Now, when the Muppet comes back, John Henson, I don't think that Thon is going to play 33 or not. I think he's going to go back to his 21 or 22 minutes and providing deep league value. But before this game, McCurr had been pretty shithouse for the majority of the season. Really hadn't shown us anything enticing. This is really good. And this is his type of dynasty upside. but it's one game out of 16 or 17 so far this season, and he has struggled most of the time. I think the Muppet goes back and starts, or even if McCurr continues to start, I think it's a 20-minute McCurr, 28-minute Henson split. I could be wrong, because Kidd often does shit that you've just got no way of being able to know, like starting Gary Payton II. For the Suns, revenge game for Greggy Munro. Now, Phoenix. Tyson Chandler was back, rushed back into the starting locks. We've got to get him back into the starting lock. Has to happen. And yeah, Greg Munro had been starting, and he moved out. I thought, okay, well, this is a real interesting situation. Will they play all three centers? Will they give Munro a DMP? Turns out, no, they'll give their youngest center, Alex Len, a DMP CD, while Munro plays 32 minutes off the bench and goes for 22 and 15. No one is doubting Munro's talents. No one is doubting that at all, and he is the best of those centers by a significant margin. But what is the point of this? You know, we want to trade him. We want to engage in buyout talks. And again, this game has got all the markings of things that shit me to tears. Revenge game / showcase trade game. If you're an NBA GM and you don't know what Greg Munro is after his 7 years in the NBA, if you don't know how he plays, get a new job. Because if you require one game where they force-feed him the ball and force-feed him minutes so you can go, oh, man, you know what? 7 years, I know what he did. But in that one game, in that last game that he had, he played 32 and had 22 and 15. I am sold. I'll give you everything. You don't deserve to be a GM. Simple as that. And there are plenty of GMs who don't deserve to be GMs.
Bite my shiny metal ass.
34 minutes for Dragan, 11 and 6, 3 triples, 2 steals, and a block. I should really go back to talk about Munro before I talk about Bender. Add Munro. If he's in 12s, I'd be okay adding him, because if he's going to play this amount of minutes, then that's fine. But consistency is... Look, he... In the last game, he started and played fewer minutes than this. And then the starter comes back and he plays more? If anyone can work that out, please let me know. You can't work this bullshit out that these coaches trot out. There's no logic to anything that they do. As for Alex Len, while there's these three centers around, how are you going to hold him in a 12-team league? It's really, really tough going. He could very well come out and play 28 in the next game. I do like Len as a player, but this sort of thing is bullshit, and it is going to be hard to deal with. Now, as for Bender, 11 and 6, 2 steals, a block, and 3 triples, he is actually going to be a very good NBA player. I don't know if he's going to be an awesome fantasy guy, but he's going to be a very good NBA guy. 16-team leagues, 18-team leagues, you want to take a squiz. But remember that Jared Dudley is out. When he comes back, as much as I love Jared Dudley, he's going to come in and play 24 minutes and stifle the youngsters. But he can stifle Marquis Chris all he wants, because he is terrible. 12 minutes for Chris, 2 and 2. 12-team leagues, it's literally piss him off. Like, he is just a horrendous, horrendous player. And he does have physical talents. But when your head's not switched on, when you are an absolute sook and you complain and drop your head and put in no effort, you're not going to play minutes. And that's one. I can criticize Triano. He can criticize me if he wants. I can criticize him for his center rotations and all that stuff. But one thing that I'm really, really pleased with what he's doing is he doesn't put up with this bullshit from Chris. If you're going to be a petty, whiny little asshole out there, you're going to sit on the bench. And that is totally fine. Because you're not good enough as a player anyway to be able to play through petulance. So if you're going to pull this bullshit and be immature, sit down. And that's pretty much what's happening. And you should sit his ass down in your leagues. Tyler Ulis had 12, 2, and 5 with 2 steals. Clearly, he's the pick between him and Mike James for now. That could change at any point. And in fact, the next game, he might play 20 minutes while James plays 28. So be prepared for that. Devin Booker hit the game-tying 3, had 23, 4, and 4 with 3 blocks, weirdly enough. While TJ Warren had 20 and 11 with 3 steals. Both guys were inefficient, though. Joshie Jackson... Yeah, it's not going to happen for him this year in 12-team leagues, definitely. It's not happening. Now, on to the last game of the night, the Lakers and the Sacramento Kings. Julius Randle, another strong night, 14 and 8, 2 steals and a block. Very, very interesting the way that Luke Walton's going to handle the return of Larry Nance next week. Really going to be intriguing to see how that all goes down. I get the feeling that Randall's going to lose some minutes. Kuzma's going to lose some minutes. But Brook Lopez played just 17 minutes in this one. He is going to struggle the most. And they're going to run a lot of Randall at center, Nance at center. And don't be shocked if you see many sub-20 Brook Lopez minutes going. If you can sell Brook Lopez now for a top 80 player, it might be hard. I would be inclined to explore those deals. Caldwell Pope had 20 points with 4 triples and 3 assists, while Lonzo, 37 minutes, 11, 7, and 11. He is a good fantasy player. The shooting is horrendous. It was 50% from this one. Hit a couple of late threes. and don't expect that. But the other numbers are really good and they are useful. Ingram had 12, 6, and 6 and continues to be more impressive than we thought, while Kyle Kuzma had the Uncle P. Nick Young special, 17 and 2 with 0 assists and 3 triples. Decent scoring numbers, much like the pencil Harrison Barnes, real sexy start of a box score guy, and it fades away pretty quickly. Jordan Clarkson's usage continues to be out of this world, 32%, 15 points with not a lot else in 26 minutes. Fine to own, it can't persist at this level. On to the Kings, some interesting things said in the broadcast here. Before the game started, ESPN legitimately had a talking point, graphics produced, all this sort of stuff, asking the panel, do you think that De'Aaron Fox should be starting for this team? Yeah, man, he absolutely should be starting. He's a lottery pick. They need to get him in, and they need to start have him starting on this team. They need to put George Hill and mentor him. They really do need to get Fox into that starting lineup. Obviously unaware that Fox has been starting for the last 3 to 4 games. So shout out to everybody involved in that production. Shout out to Doris Burke for correcting it when they went forward and they talked about Fox and they said he's actually been starting for the past 4 games. So shout out to her for Doris Burke for getting that right. But that is just insanity to me that they could have a whole segment pre-prepared talking about why aren't the Kings starting De'Aaron Fox when they legitimately are. And there are people who spout off shit with all levels of confidence all the time. Like I tweeted this out today about this interaction and someone replied to me saying, oh, nah, man, he's only been starting because Bud Heald's been injured. Heald had been starting the whole season before he got injured. No. Heald started 7 games and played the next 8 off the bench. So Heald's injury has absolutely nothing to do with Fox moving into the starting lineup. But yeah, just make up shit and act like you're confident and know what you're talking about. Will Cauley-Stein, 26-6 with 2 steals. He was fantastic in 28 minutes. That's 3 big games out of the last 4 since he's been on the bench. He's a guy to own, but inconsistency will be a problem. Or Zach Randolph, I have to talk about this. 22-7-7 with 3 steals, 2 triples. That is a monster from Zach Randolph. You would not expect 7 assists or 3 steals from him, really ever. But he's getting minutes, we know that. He's putting up numbers, and you could do a lot worse in a 12-team league. Now, one thing I do want to mention is this organization's a shit show. Because I was talking about this during the broadcast. It was a bad signing to bring him in. Because then they said that there was a discussion with Zach Randolph about, maybe we could play you fewer minutes to get the young guys into some playing time. And he was like, nah, man, don't want that. Why would you bring Zach Randolph in if he's got zero intention of being a mentor and playing a limited role? What kind of just insane bullshit is this from the front office? I thought that they'd spoken to him. Yeah, Zach, you'll come in, you'll play a little bit, you might start for a bit, then you'll mentor guys. But when they come in and say, Zach, we want to play a few minutes and come off the bench. No, I'm not doing that. And the second thing is, Dave, yeah, you go. If that's what you're going to do, do it. Just do it. Say, sorry, Zach. You've been here for 20 games. You have no pull over any of this bullshit. Even though, maybe there was the old reach around back in Memphis. This organization doesn't owe you anything. How the hell is this run? What kind of disconnect is there between common sense and this organization at times? Now, Sacramento Kings fans, be happy. Massive win. Huge performances from Cauley-Stein. Randolph was good, but that sort of mentality is so weird to me. My boy Bogdan Bogdanovic, this is why I was pumped about him heading into this season. 14 points, 7 assists, 2 steals and 2 triples. 27 minutes. He can do this stuff. And this is not an anomaly from him. He hasn't really been given much of an opportunity this year, moved back to the bench. I don't think we ever really need to see 30 minutes of Garrett Temple ever again, although I'm sure we will. Yeah, Bogdanovic is someone to watch. He's a 16-team league guy. I do really like his upside. Budrick Hield, not so much. 10 points in 15 minutes for Budrick returning from the injury. Not worth a 12-team spot, while De'Aaron Fox had 13, 4, and 3. He is. Now, Georgie Hill, this is a weird one. 22 minutes for George after really strong games the last 3 or 4 in a row. Big numbers. This was a weird one. 0 points and 3 rebounds only for Hill. I would still hold, but really his spot on a roster in a 12-10 league is pretty tenuous. But Frank Mason played more minutes than Hill, played more minutes than Fox. He had 11, 5, and 7. He's been playing well. Definitely an add in a deep league. And as someone to watch in your standard leagues. Kostas Koufos, who'd been playing just monster minutes, played 8 minutes. So again, this team's confusion just continues to be there. Like, it's just no way to have any understanding of what they're going to do on a regular basis. Vince Carter returned, played 9 minutes. That's totally fine for Vince. 9 minutes a game, no problem. No problem with that whatsoever. But the total confusion with this roster and the rotation, I don't think it's really going to end at any point soon. All right, that does it for all the action from Wednesday. But before we do go, we're going to talk about the perfect DFS lineups, because on FanDuel you had Jeffy Teague at 50.1 and Russell Westbrook at 65.5. Tim Hardaway Jr. had 59.7 and Chrissy Middleton had 64.3. All of those were pretty, not common sense picks, but you could have made easy arguments to, and I think I talked about all those guys yesterday. Jumpin' Joe Harris, I'd like to think that I mentioned him as a GPP option. He had 36, Paulie George 51.7, and Taj Gibson 46.8. I know I didn't mention Zebo. He had 46.4, and Dwight Howard 47.1 for a big, big total of 467.6, and that cost $59,900. On DraftKings, Chrissy Paul 52.5, Timmy Hardaway 61, Jez Lamb 47.25, Zebo had 45.75, Greggy Revenge Munro had 43.75, Middleton had 63.75, Jumpin' Joe Harris 36.75, while Russ had 67 for a total of 417.75, and that cost $49,600. Remember, enjoy your Thanksgiving. There will be another podcast tomorrow breaking down all 10 games for Friday's action, so make sure you're tuning in. Whether it's on YouTube, where you can subscribe and give a thumbs up and leave a comment, or Apple Podcasts, where you can go leave a 5-star review, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, subscribe to the podcast. You'll never miss an episode, and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. And of course, check out basketballmonster.com. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Joel Embiid.